Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This week on Battleground Yorkshire, I'm in the Tory safe seat of Thirsk and Malton, where Labour have a gargantuan task to win here. I'll be speaking to the Tory MP, Kevin Hollenrake, to see whether he's under threat, and his Labour challenger, Lisa Barnes, and how she hopes to unseat him. Our spotlight issue of the week is farming and rural life, and I'll be chatting to Jonathan Roberts from the Country Land and Business Association and Richard Pears from the NFU to find out more. Hello and welcome to Pod's Own Country, the politics podcast from the Yorkshire Post. I'm your host, Mason Boycott Owen, the paper's Westminster correspondent. We are back with another episode of Battleground Yorkshire, our election series where I cover 12 seats in 12 weeks to find the story behind the polls. This week, we are in Thirsk and Malton, one of the safest seats in Yorkshire for the Conservatives. This rural seat, full of market towns, rolling countryside and farmers galore, should never be under threat from Sir Keir Starmer's party. But cracks are starting to form. A recent MRP super poll from Best for Britain suggested that this is one of only two seats which the Tories would hold in Yorkshire, the other being the Prime Minister's own constituency of Richmond. It put Labour within around 6 points of winning the seat from the Tories. To find out whether the hype is just that, I caught up with Kevin Hollenrake, the local Conservative MP and Business Minister in Rishi Sunak's government. Kevin, hello and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, nice to be here. Nice to see you, Mason.
So, what are the main issues that you're hearing on the doorstep at the moment? Are they anything different to what we're hearing nationally?
Well, there's a number, really, of course, and off my constituency, like every other, has been affected by COVID and the cost of living problems and cost of doing business. So those things are an issue, of course, and that we've got an ageing population in North Yorkshire, in Thirsk and Malton, like we have in other parts of the country, but a higher prevalence of that, I think it's fair to say. So lots of pressures on things like social care, availability of social care, availability of residential care. Those are issues. I think probably the biggest issue I've dealt with over the last year has been businesses. You know, we're an area that Thirsk and Malton looks a very prosperous area from the outside, and for some people it is. But the reality is our key industries are farming and tourism and retail, hospitality, all those kind of things, which tend to be lower end of the scale in terms of earnings. So we've got quite low earnings across Thirsk and Malton on average, Rydal significantly so, because of the kind of industries we have. Both those people have been affected by some of those cost of living pressures. But also, I think it's fair to say some of the businesses in the area have been affected by that too. So hospitality being a key one, they've had like the perfect storm, I think, hospitality of COVID, cost of living crisis, food inflation, national living wage increases, which I think we all welcome, but nevertheless, there have been really significant increases, all added pressure onto businesses, but particularly those businesses that employ people at the bottom end of the income scale, and the percentage increase is really significant, around 10%. So those are some of the issues we're experiencing. But I'm very proud to represent Thirsk and Malton, and we're very much very hopeful for the future. I think that's my general perception, is that people have been through some difficult years. I think people can see we're turning a corner in terms of the economy, in terms of inflation. Those are the key things that have been driving the difficulty. So it's good to see those things abating.
And how at risk is your seat from Labour at the moment? Obviously, there's a large voting Tory population there, but with that comes a few risks. Reform are targeting former Tory voters, and there's a hell of a lot of them in the seat. How much of a risk are they, and could they make a serious dent in your majority, or even worse?
Well, I'm certainly not complacent, you know, and there's no doubt there'll be some people think reform is the right answer. And so, I mean, UKIP and reform haven't tended to have a big impact on Thurscombe Morton, but that's not to say they can't in the future. I think people are frustrated with the current illegal immigration situation across the country, and we're frustrated too. And we're particularly frustrated because both Parliament and some elements of the judiciary can make our life difficult in terms of trying to change the rules. And that's been proven to be the case in recent months, and still is proven to be the case. So I get that, and I think we need to do more, and we are trying to do more. The Rwanda reforms that we're trying to get, the legislation that we're trying to get, would have a significant impact in terms of deterrence, therefore reduce numbers. Numbers are already down around about a third year on year, but nevertheless, it's not a problem that's going to go away unless we can properly deal with it and put the deterrence in place. And I think it's perfectly reasonable for people to say that you know, we should control who enters this country, and rather than it should be something that's imposed upon us. So I fully subscribe to that view. And so that's key, that we make more progress than that this year if we're going to offset the issue with reform. Of course, I'm going to say what you'd expect me to say, is that reform won't get any members of parliament in the country. They will simply increase the numbers of Labour members of parliament, which will put Keir Starmer in number 10 Downing Street. And that if you want to reduce the numbers of illegal immigrants into this country, that will be very counterproductive based on his voting record and general, his voting record in terms of both in the House of Commons and in the House of Lords.
Why do you think people in your seats care so much about immigration? I mean, if we look at the seats' demographics, you know, Thurscombe Morton is largely untouched by pretty much all forms of immigration in comparison to other seats in Yorkshire.
I don't think people just worry about the local area. I think people worry about the country. And, you know, I think it is worrying when people, you see lots of young, you know, people between ages of whatever, 15 and 25, young single males coming over on the bus over into this country without, you know, without permission to do so. And I think there are real concerns around that. I understand that. You know, I think it's perfectly reasonable to want to make sure your borders are secure. I think people are not just worried about where their backyard, they're worried about the nation as a whole. And I support that. I'm worried about that too. I'm worried about it for my children and my grandchildren and those people are too. So I think it's perfectly reasonable for people to worry about what's happening to the nation. You know, and I think there are rational concerns, but ones we need to deal with.
And your seat is quite a rural one. What are the very kind of rural specific issues that we're hearing from voters? Obviously, farming will be a very big concern to a lot of your constituents.
I mean, it's fair to say, I mean, my dad was a farmer. I understand some of these problems, and I've got a great deal of time for farmers. I have regular meetings, including I met with a group of farmers only a couple of weeks ago in Bartlett Street, the village hall there. It is the most volatile manufacturing sector in the world. I mean, you know, but most think products you manufacture, there's almost a set price for them, might fluctuate a few percentage either way according to supply, but agriculture is a very, very volatile sector in terms of pricing. So you're right to say at the moment the principal problem for farmers, a couple of principal problems, is grain prices have dropped from over £200 a ton down to mid 100, so between 140 and 150. So that's a big impact, you know, when you plan ahead. And some of the cost prices, input costs are higher, things like fertilizer. Although the price per ton has dropped, it's still significantly higher than it was pre-COVID. And so there's some real issues there. There's some issues around also the weather. I mean, you know, obviously they're all subject to weather, but I don't think anybody's seen a wetter winter than this. Lots of farmers in our neck of the woods and across the UK can't sow crops. It's as bad as that. Can't do crops. It's as bad as that. So at the same time, you've got this, as you said, you've got a new scheme coming in terms of payments, in terms of agricultural payments, which is actually, we've made much more generous. The difficulty with that, of course, is that as prices come down in terms of grain price, wheat prices, and the revenue you can get from some of the environmental land management schemes goes up, the sustainable farm incentive for example. Actually, some farmers are choosing not to farm this year or for the next 2 or 3 years. You've got some whole farms going into these ELM schemes because it seems more profitable to do that than actually farm it, which is cannot be good for domestic food production. So there are these kind of issues. So we have tried to tackle some of the things you said about generosity of scheme. We're still paying £2.4 billion a year to farmers in terms of direct support to try and support their activities and the fantastic stewardship they provide in terms of our countryside. So it's all about a balance.
For Labour, this seat is a big ask to win, as it is with most of North Yorkshire's seats. These are the areas that the Tories were forced back into in 1997, before slowly recovering to its outstanding result in 2019. But, as I heard from voters all across the country, people in Yorkshire feel like they've been taken for granted, perhaps nowhere more true than in the countryside, which does not see the same level of spotlight as the bright lights of our cities. I caught up with Lisa Barnes, Labour's newly selected candidate, to find out how her party hopes to capitalise on that feeling at the next election. Lisa, hi, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me.
This seat is a Tory heartland. Is there anything that you're picking up on the doorstep to make us think that there's a Labour swell in the background and that things could change this time around?
I think in this general election, all's to play for, to be honest. I think the Conservatives have completely taken the country for granted, and they've particularly taken rural communities for granted. I think that the fact that this is considered a safe Conservative seat means that they've been able to effectively run roughshod. The Tories claim they have a plan for rural Britain, but they've had 14 years to implement it if they do. I've not seen any sign of that. And what I'm hearing on the doorstep from voters that I'm speaking to in the constituency is that people are very, very angry and feel let down. So I think, while I hear what you're saying in regards to this being traditionally a safe Conservative seat, I think that the result may not necessarily reflect that on election night.
Housing really seems to be one of the most undermentioned themes of this election, and it really is something that is brought up time and time again by the voters that I speak to. How is the housing crisis affecting people in this seat?
I think that in terms of that, there does need to be more supply, but there needs to be a better quality of supply, and a greater proportion of it needs to be genuinely affordable. I know that developers are supposed to have a minimum percentage of the homes that they're building as affordable homes. That isn't always the case. And the definition of affordable isn't always yours or my definition of affordable, I have to say. Which is really unfortunate, because young people trying to get on the property ladder is difficult enough as it is, without the only homes available in the area or in the constituency that they want to live in being unfortunately completely out of their reach. I'd like people to choose to move into the constituency as well. I think there's been a greater kind of outflux of people moving from cities to better locations, countryside locations, wanting that better quality of life. I think that happened during COVID when people were working from home. And people should have the choice to move here. I'd like to see more people having that choice, not at the expense of the Greenbelt, I have to say. But there are plenty of brownfield sites, plenty of disused sites that could be put over to housing, and I know that Labour's committed to that. And what I will say on that is that I will always fight to protect the Greenbelt and protect the environment where that is the case. There are plenty of suitable sites for housing. It's just a matter of identifying them and then getting the developers to build on them, but building good quality, affordable homes.
Obviously, farmers aren't the most natural bedfellow for the Labour Party in terms of voters, but what are the concerns in the seat that you're hoping to exploit and the party's hoping to give an answer to this time around?
I know people are very frustrated by the amount of red tape prospects Brexit. The environmental land management scheme was supposed to be helping farmers, but the way that it's worked, the way that it's being implemented, is a little bit broken, I hate to say it, because it should on the face of it be a decent scheme. We are committed as Labour to trying to make it work. The problem with it is that it favours environmental sustainability at the cost of food production. And we want greater food security in this country. We want to see our hospitals, prisons, public sector buy a lot of food for our infrastructure. And we would like to see a greater proportion of that being bought from British food producers and from British farms, which will help to kind of kickstart the rural economy a little bit more as well. But the way that the scheme has been implemented, the ELM scheme, it's just not working. We are committed to making it work. We're committed to looking at it, looking at the detail of it. It is designed to replace the EU subsidies, so it is incredibly important. But we want to make sure that we're having nature-friendly actions alongside sustainable food production, because we do think that food production is incredibly important for our food security and for our country. We also are very, very aware, and I was alarmed to hear actually by how many firms in the UK agricultural sector have gone out of business since 2017, more than 6,300, which includes nearly 5,000 meat, fruit, vegetable and dairy producers that have gone out of business since 2017. I think that's incredibly damaging for our food security, for our vibrancy, for our way of life in rural communities as well. Something is clearly broken here, and Labour has a plan to sort it out. If the Conservatives have a plan to fix rural communities, they've had 14 years to implement it. And as far as I can see, they haven't.
Thurscombe Moulton has the highest proportion of agricultural land of any seat in Yorkshire. And as such, we're taking a deep dive into the issues farmers are facing along with rural communities. Having left the EU, the farming sector now has to strike not only a new deal with the British government on how it's funded, but also with other countries, as trade deals open up new frontiers for business. But these countryside communities are not accustomed to the pace of change that many in the UK are crying out for. This makes it a tough ask for Labour if it wants to be a reforming government. I spoke to Jonathan Roberts from the Country Land and Business Association to see how rural voters are weighing up their options ahead of polling day. Jonathan, hello, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much.
Labour seems to be making a bit of an inroad into rural seats like this. May not be enough to flip it, but they certainly seem to be making some progress. Why do you think that is?
There's a number of things here, I think. Partly, we've got to recognise the pendulum of British politics. We've had a Conservative government or a Conservative-led government for 14 years. And I think it's quite visible to a lot of people that that party is beginning to, you know, maybe run out of ideas, and it's for them to prove otherwise. You've also got, I think, a split in conservative attitudes at the moment. There are some people who believe that modern conservatism is, frankly, a bit too left-leaning, a bit too liberal democrat, perhaps, and that's why you've got parties such as Reform doing well. And also, you've got a population shift. You've got more and more people who have lived in urban environments or suburban environments moving to Yorkshire market towns. Now, I'm from Thirsk. I'm from a village called Sowerby, just outside Thirsk. And that village is now completely unrecognisable to the one that I grew up in. And I'm not going to get into the rights and wrongs of it. But there are thousands more homes that have been plonked on old farmers' fields, the ones that I remember, just in the last 10, 15 years or so. So the actual makeup of our communities is changing. And that's not just happening in Thirsk, it's happening elsewhere. You know, Kirby Moorside, in the heart of the village, in the heart of the constituency, it's happening there too. It's happening across the constituency. So you've got different people now living in the community, and they're coming with different ideas, different political attitudes, different experiences. And a lot of them won't be so rooted in the local community. Many of them will be commuting to the bigger industrial areas, the bigger urban areas such as York and Leeds to the south. And you know, as high as all the way up to places like Newcastle in the north. I mean, I know several people who are commuting to Newcastle almost every day from Thirsk alone. So things are changing.
Obviously, things are changing slightly, but having chatted to a few people in Thirsk, it seems to have retained a bit more of its rural character than places such as Harrogate, which the people there seem to laud as a suburb of London more than anything else. Should that seems fair that Thirsk has retained a lot of that rural charm that may be a draw to many people, but still keeps a lot of the locals in love with the place.
I think it's probably true. I mean, I'm a Thirsk lad, and it's the best place in the world as far as I'm concerned. But things will change, and people understand that. But I think this conversation goes to the very heart of what the left and the right of politics is actually about. You need a left of centre, because every now and then things need to change, and you need a right of centre because every now and then things need to stay exactly the same. And the point of political debate, I suppose, is to figure out which is right for the thing that you're talking about. Does it need to change, or does it need to stay the same? Now, rural folk tend to be more conservative because they tend to prefer a slower pace of change. They like to conserve things. Their heritage and their community and their way of life is fragile. It's a way of life that's been developed over hundreds of years. And while that doesn't mean that things should stay the same forever, because we should never treat the countryside as a museum, people in the countryside are, though, quite reasonably suspicious of those who do want dramatic change, and voting Conservative is part and parcel of that. I think they're also very suspicious of the modern culture of, wagging fingers and telling others what they're allowed to say and what they're allowed to do and what they're allowed to think, which has, I think, been a bit of a feature of the left recently, particularly what you might call the middle class left. But I think there's also a practical element for the Labour Party in rural areas, which is that they tend to be quite absent from the countryside. They, like everybody, have limited resources, and therefore they tend to spend their time and their money on areas where they have traditionally picked up support. That might be changing now, of course.
And when we turn to farmers, obviously they're a key part of the rural economy in places like Thirsk. How much are they struggling at the moment? Because we keep hearing, time and time again that there are reports, that they seem to be, not doing as well as we'd hope.
It's difficult in the farming sector at the moment, and this is nationwide. I think there's one element to this which we may come on to, which is the move from the European Union Common Agricultural Policy to what we call environmental land management schemes, which are the new kind of environmental schemes that will pay farmers to help support their business. But then there's all the other thing. The input costs at the moment are bonkers and have been bonkers for some time. And I think the fact that prices have held up reasonably well has masked, I think, some underlying problems. And there's a big question that we need to answer at some point, which is who's making money out of our food supply chain? Because it's not farmers. Even in times of economic crisis, and we have a sort of perma crisis at the moment, not just here but elsewhere in the world, supermarkets tend to be doing exceptionally well. There's always profits kicking around. There's plenty of profits elsewhere in the supply chain, but the farmers aren't making money, and we have to get to we really have to get to the bottom of that. And of course, when some despot invades a neighboring land, that sends the entire global economy into haywire, that doesn't help too. But I think when we look at government schemes that are kicking around at the moment, I would really encourage farmers from across Thirsk and Moulton and across all of Yorkshire to look very seriously at them. The environmental land management schemes can work for your business. We've got a whole variety of productivity schemes as well, which will help your business. If you apply for these grants, apply to, you know, to enter into these schemes, there is money available to help you improve your productivity, help you with the cost of machinery, and other forms of equipment, even robotics and so on. And as we move towards a more environmentally friendly food system, these incentives are in place now that aren't just about the environment, they're about your business. So even those who have written those schemes off, unfairly in my view, I'd encourage them very strongly to look at them again, because certainly the Sustainable Farming Incentive for 2024 is pretty good, I think.
Having left the EU, farmers are now facing even more uncertainty following the war in Ukraine and conflict in the Middle East, as we see global supply chains tested to their breaking point and ending up a lot more fragile than many had feared. As such, domestic food production is vital to the UK's future, but farmers themselves are struggling to see how it is profitable for them. I caught up with Richard Pearce from the National Farmers Union to find out more. Richard, hi, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
So what issues are being raised by farmers at the moment, and is there anything the government can do to assist them?
Well, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, probably one of the main issues is the Great British weather, but there's nothing that the government can do about that, unfortunately. I mean, obviously, since Brexit, there's been a huge change in policy for farming, because previously it was European level policy and now everything is domestic. And so a big shift has been from the European system of common agriculture policy into the new system of ELMS, which is very much still developing at the moment. The principle of it probably was set out back in 2018 in the Health and Harmony consultation, where the idea was we'd move to this idea of public goods for public money, providing sort of services that were maybe not paid for by the marketplace in terms of improving the environment, improving sustainability. And so there's been a steady process of developing that policy since then. And we have a transition, an agricultural transition, which started in 2021 and runs to 2027. So we're in the middle of that now. I suppose the one thing that the industry is really desperate for is some certainty going forward. Obviously, with a big change, not just in the policy of how farming might be supported, but also as recapturing control over a lot of regulation and legislation that, again, used to be in Europe, and that's now moved back to the UK. And so we're having to set up new legislative systems, which, you know, we don't know what the policy regarding some of those is going to be. We're also in a stage now where budget, we know we've got a budget for agriculture in this parliament. We actually have no idea what the budget for agriculture will be after this parliament. And we're also now outside of Europe engaging in, you know, create the government creating its own trade deals with third nations and the effect that can have on agriculture. So yeah, what we're sort of really lacking is a sort of long-term certainty as to, you know, where policy is going, what the government wants from British agriculture. It's very different or very difficult at the moment to know exactly where policy is going to end up.
And on these trade deals, are they all that they're cracked up to be, or is it more of a complex picture for farmers in terms of what they're actually getting out of them?
Yeah, I think it's quite complicated. I think certainly some of the trade deals, you know, there are concerns that, you know, there will be a harmful impact on British agriculture. I think possibly the Australia trade deal maybe stands out amongst that. I mean, there was access for a lot of imports for Australian beef and lamb within that. And there was actually a sort of a 10-year period where there was a sort of limit to that quota they could import, and then that limit would lift by a long way. So there's kind of an impact to some of these trade deals we won't actually really fully understand for quite a number of years yet. And I think that, you know, there's also questions at the moment that, you know, we have very high standards of production in the UK, and we're very proud of the, you know, the high standards that we produce food to, and I think we have a very sustainable system of production. And I think, you know, the government is looking more and more to encourage sustainable practices and improve the environment and increase standards in many respects. And so a major concern is that then trade deals allow products that don't meet the same standards to come into our market and compete with us. And it's very hard to compete on price if we have you know, standards that require us to incur additional cost and to compete against imports. And I think it's frustrating, and I think there are questions, there are long-term questions about whether the current even basis of how we trade is really fit for purpose. And I know there's an awful lot of public support for British production, and I know the NFU had a sort of food standards petition back in 22, and I think they got over 1 million signatories, and that developed the Trade and Agriculture Commission, which was put in place to assess the impact of any proposed trade deals on British farming, to report to Parliament. So, you know, that was a good step forward, but it hasn't necessarily stopped trade deals or being made that, you know, do possibly have an impact on British agriculture.
And from a more political standpoint, do farmers think that they've been offered enough by Labour this time around to start voting for them? Obviously, you know, it's down to individual farmers how they vote, and, you know, they don't vote as one massive voting block. But in terms of, you know, the offers from the main parties, has Labour really put a compelling offer forward to farmers?
Farmers, yeah, are always keen to engage with the government of the day. And I think it's very hard to make many judgments, because I don't think there's any particular specific policy areas that Labour have produced, you know, going into the next election. So it's very hard to know what they represent or what they have the plans for, which again comes back to this problem of uncertainty. You know, that's not helpful. And it's not to say, though, that you know, other parties have necessarily committed. I think maybe only the Dems, the only one who've committed in terms of budget for farming. So, you know, farmers will look to kind of shape policy and, you know, and engage with whichever government we end up. And, yeah, obviously the reality is people, when they go to the polling booth, you know, even farmers won't just be voting purely necessarily to do with, you know, what one particular party's view is on farming. It's a wider issue in terms of a general election. But, you know, yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens this general election. I certainly think, you know, there is disquiet in the countryside, you know, about politics at the moment.
That's all we have time for. If you like what you heard this week, then you can subscribe to the Yorkshire Post for more interviews and analysis from me this weekend. Next week, I'll be heading to the bright lights of Leeds Central and Headingley to find out how safe Labour's core student vote is, and explore how today's young people have a raw deal compared to their parents. See you then.